This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Philosophers, theologians, medical ethicists, and politicians are wrestling with the questions surrounding embryonic stem cell research. The new book, Stem Cell Now, addresses many of these questions and explains the science of stem cell research and what the research may be able to achieve. My guest is the author, Christopher Thomas Scott. He's the director of the Program on Stem Cells and Society at Stanford University's Center for Biomedical Ethics. Here's how the National Institutes of Health describes human embryonic stem cells. Quote, stem cells are cells that have the remarkable potential to develop into many different cell types in the body. Serving as a sort of repair system for the body, they can theoretically divide without limit to replenish other cells for as long as the person or animal is still alive. When a stem cell divides, each daughter cell has the potential to either remain a stem cell or become another type of cell with a more specialized function, such as a muscle cell, a red blood cell, or a brain cell, unquote. But as Scott explains, not all stem cells are embryonic.
Stem cells come in two varieties, two basic varieties. One is the embryonic stem cell, the most powerful stem cells. Those come from early human embryos. The second variety are called adult stem cells. Those actually appear during fetal development. So adult isn't quite the right term for them, but they persist throughout adulthood, and that's why they're called adult stem cells. Adult stem cells are not as powerful as embryonic stem cells, and the two are very closely related because they have similar behaviors.
And what are the similarities and differences?
The similarities between embryonic and adult stem cells is that they both make more of themselves. It's a behavior called self-renewal. So adult stem cells make more stem cells, and so do embryonic stem cells. So they're, in essence, immortal. The differences between adult and embryonic stem cells is that embryonic stem cells can make any of the 200 cells in the body. It's a process called differentiation. And adult stem cells, because they're developmentally older, are more restricted in what they can become. So a stem cell in the blood, for example, can make any of the 9 different kinds of blood cells, including red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets.
Now, you've said in your book that the reality of stem cell biology is overshadowed by the hype. What do you mean?
Well, embryonic stem cell biology and regular adult stem cell biology are two parts of a very important discipline in sciences. And I believe that embryonic stem cell research is just one part of a larger picture. And because embryos, human embryos, are used for embryonic stem cell research, that particular fact has been part of a very vigorous and acrimonious at times debate about whether we should be using early forms of life for scientific research. And that part of the debate, often the shouting that goes on in that debate, often eclipses some of the other very important results that are coming from the adult stem cell field. And it's important to note that embryonic stem cells and adult stem cells are close relations. They're part of a large family of cells that exist. And without understanding embryonic stem cells, a lot of the important information about adult stem cells is lost. In fact, Liz Blackburn, who works at the University of California, San Francisco, she was also on the President's Commission for Bioethics, said that one can't find answers to questions about apples by doing research on oranges, but you can learn about fruit in general, but the nuances of disease are very, very specific. And that's a very telling statement, because if embryonic stem cell research is prohibited, as it is effectively in the United States, the adult stem cell knowledge that we can gain from understanding the family in general is also slowed.
Well, that's a kind of catch-22, because the president, for instance, would like scientists to pursue adult stem cell research and just do very, very limited embryonic stem cell research.
Right, it is a catch-22, and it's a little bit like learning something about your significant other, I suppose, by finally meeting the in-laws. If you see that the father is drinking milk right out of the carton from the refrigerator, it makes a lot of sense that that you would see it actually in your mate, too. So learning about adult stem cell research, those insights, many of them will come from the embryonic stem cell field.
What's the difference between the potential of the two or how they behave? I mean, if adult stem cells were easy to work with, then it would be no problem to abandon embryonic stem cell research and just focus on adult stem cells.
Adult stem cells have a few finicky behaviors that makes them very difficult to work with. One is that they are rare, so it's hard to find them in the body. The second thing is once you've found them, they are devilishly hard to cultivate in the laboratory. And the promise behind embryonic stem cell research is that embryonic stem cells make adult stem cells. So they're the early ancestors of adult stem cells. So knowing how to actually create adult stem cells from embryonic stem cells can kind of solve the problem of lack of numbers.
What are your hopes for what scientists will eventually be able to do therapeutically with stem cell research?
Well, the good news is that adult stem cells are already used in therapies. Cord blood is another area of interest for clinicians. Cord blood taken from the umbilical cord of babies are very powerful. They are used to cure some cancers in children, especially cancers of the blood and some genetic diseases. So there's a lot of very promising research in the cord blood area too. And then there are a bunch of clinical trials going on right now using stem cells that are found in the joints of our knees, there are also blood stem cells being injected into the heart. Those trials are rather controversial at the moment and just beginning.
What are some of the diseases that you think are most likely to be treatable at some point in the not-too-distant future with stem cells?
Well, I think the far future, whether we actually use embryonic stem cells to create organs is many, many, many decades out. The near future will be inroads into therapies for, I would say, diabetes is a very fertile area of research. There are trials now starting for spinal cord injuries using derivatives of embryonic stem cells. Certainly, some of the most interesting work will actually be using embryonic stem cells and stem cells as tools to discover drugs or to understand how disease progresses. The nice thing about using human stem cells in the laboratory is that they can mimic a disease, a much easier way of studying a disease than studying it in patients who suffer from it.
The president has restricted federal funding for stem cell research. Only certain lines of stem cells are allowed to be funded. And before we go any further into that, would you just give us the basic refresher course and what that means?
An embryonic stem cell line is an immortal line of cells that is grown in the laboratory. Those cells come from the 4 to 6 day old human embryo. So that's what an embryonic stem cell line is. Before President Bush issued his proclamation in August 2001 saying that the government would restrict research on embryonic stem cell lines, there existed, by some accounts, about 70 lines worldwide that had already been created in embryonic stem cell laboratories. Since that time, those 70 lines have dwindled to about 10 to 20. The 10 to 20 lines that are now on the registry that are usable are good for research purposes, but none of those lines are usable for therapies. So since 2001, researchers in the United States cannot use government funds to work on embryonic stem cell lines, create new ones. Now, private money can be used to work on lines, new lines that are created in the United States, and government money can be used on these 10 to 20 lines that that are usable on the registry.
Why is federal funding so important? I mean, it's not like stem cell research is illegal. It's just that you can't use federal funding for most of it. So what's the importance of the federal funding?
Well, federal funding is the thing that drives most biomedical research in the United States. The NIH, for example, the biggest funding agency, pumps in about $27 billion every year into biomedical research. So it is a big source of money that propels the basic science of the United States. And without that resource, the research quite simply goes more slowly. And there have been some that say, well, you know, this money can come from other sources, foundations, private individuals. Well, I don't know many organizations or individuals that have pocketbooks like $27 billion. So the result really is that much embryonic stem cell research, the new results are coming from other countries such as Singapore, England, Australia, Israel, where embryonic stem cell research is permitted.
What impact is that having on science in the United States?
Well, there are a couple of things that come to mind. One is that the United States is accustomed simply to being in the lead on this area, in this area. And the fact that we now lag by some measures is disconcerting to the biomedical community, to patients who are looking for cures, and to generally the kind of the stem cell biologists who work on this. The second thing, the more troublesome thing, I think, is that it has created an environment in the United States where young scientists may be choosing other careers. Now, I don't have any hard evidence for this. This is anecdotal, what I can determine from talking to people in laboratories nationwide. And that's that when the young investigators choose a career, they choose a career based on how well that career might be funded from all sources, including the government. And if they look at their possibilities for becoming professors, assistant professors, associate professors, and full professors over their career, and see that the government hasn't been excited about funding the research that interests them, they'll pick another career. And what happens with that is that once those young scientists pick different careers, you create a knowledge gap inside the American academic system. And with that knowledge gap, you lose a bunch of things. You lose the ability to train new students. You lose the ability to bring therapies to patients quickly. You lose an institutional or maybe a scientific memory about this very important area of science. And that knowledge then goes to other countries.
There's a few states that are trying to make themselves centers of embryonic stem cell research. By doing what?
Well, in California, they passed a Proposition 71, which was a bond measure to fund stem cell research of all types, not just embryonic stem cell research, for the next 10 years. It's a $3 billion initiative that still has yet to take effect. Other states are jumping on that bandwagon, passing measures to fund research through state funding mechanisms. And then there are other places where money can come from. The large philanthropic organizations such as the Howard Hughes Medical Foundation, the Stowers Institute, and others have stepped up and funded stem cell research in the tens and twenties of millions of dollars level.
How effective do you think they'll be in compensating for the money that isn't coming from the federal government?
Well, I don't think it's going to be very effective. It certainly is a start, and tens of millions of dollars here and there is better than nothing, for sure. But until we get a national policy that puts us right at the front of what we should be doing in biomedical research, I'm afraid that America will be looking to other shores for the new discoveries and perhaps the new therapies. I think that would be a terrible thing to actually have American patients that are suffering from disease have to travel overseas to get their therapies because we couldn't do it here first.
You study the social and ethical implications of stem cell research. So how do you go about trying to think through the issue of the ethics of embryonic stem cell research? Where do you begin?
Well, I begin with the embryo. That is the subject of all of the debate about whether we should be using embryos to derive embryonic stem cell lines or leaving those embryos alone. Those are the two questions. And when I think about use of the embryo as a very early form of human life, it helps me to reason through what that early form of human life is about from both a biological perspective and also from a moral perspective, how I feel about it, what my values are about that embryo. And this is a personal choice and a personal decision of mine that I believe that an embryo at the 4 to 6 day stage is not a human being. It's not capable of suffering, either experiencing joy or pain. It is something that we should hold in high regard and in that respect shouldn't be used in a capricious manner. On the other hand, I'm very sure of what I see when I see someone suffering from diabetes or someone who is paralyzed because of an injury, automobile injury. And I know for certain when I see patients in the hospital near where I work that those folks are indeed people and they indeed are suffering and that their families suffer and that as someone as part of a biomedical community, a community of scientists who are studying these amazing cells, that it is a duty, really, an obligation of mine and other people who work in the field agree with me on this, to try to use these cells to help that suffering and help those people who are injured. So it really comes down to the definition for individuals that are looking at this in terms of how they feel about the embryo as a form of human life. I feel the embryo ought to be used for biomedical research. There are others, many on the religious right, who feel that the embryo is sacrosanct and should be just left alone.
President Borgia appointed a commission on bioethics, and the commission has advised him on stem cell research, but that commission has proved to be pretty controversial. For what reasons?
Well, the commission issued a series of reports that basically underscored the party line, the Bush administration party line, and the controversy really surrounds how the members of the commission were appointed. Now, presidents can appoint executive commissions like this in any way they choose, but in this particular case, the commission was seen to be very much on the neoconservative right. Those members were known by their own publications and writing to be in opposition to working with embryos, in vitro fertilization, anti-abortion, were among the stated positions that they had. And so as a result, it was no surprise to see that the commission's findings were very much in line with their earlier thinking. Now, commissions in the past, presidential commissions on ethics in the past, in my view, have been more balanced. And as a result, the policy that has come out of those commissions is more balanced. One example of that is the towering Belmont Report, which is a legal document that tells us how we should treat patients in biomedical research. So I think history will look back on this presidential commission and perhaps judge it against some of the others in terms of how effective it was and how pluralistic it was in terms of setting this very important policy for America.
My guest is Christopher Scott. He's the author of the new book, Stem Cell Now, and he directs the program on stem cells and society at Stanford University. It's part of the Center for Biomedical Ethics at Stanford. You know, we're talking about embryonic stem cells and adult stem cells. So obviously adults have stem cells. Do we know we have them? I mean, what could I possibly identify a stem cell in my body, and what function are they serving in my body now?
Well, no, you couldn't identify a stem cell in your body because they're extremely hard to find. They're very, very low numbers. But if you can isolate enough of them, you can kind of figure out what they do by their properties. They have very unusual behavior. I like to think of it in terms of how we regenerate ourselves. So, for example, we're basically falling apart and being rebuilt every second, the human body is. We lose about 1 billion cells of every type every hour, and 1 million skin cells drop off every day. And the red blood cells are the most ephemeral variety. We lose billions of them every day. And without a way to replace them, we'd simply fall apart. For example, our intestines, that's an area of a very high cell turnover, so there's a lot of stem cell activity there. Our intestines would disappear in 2 days. Well, mine would probably disappear in 1 day because I like spicy food. Our skin would fall off in 3 weeks, and we'd run out of red blood cells in 4 months. So without stem cells, we'd be nothing but a skeleton and maybe a few organs limping along, kind of an interesting way of looking at the regenerative potential of adult stem cells. And it's because of this regenerative potential that scientists get very excited about how they could be used to regenerate organs or tissues that have problems because of disease or even more wonderfully, organs that die as we get older. So stem cell therapies and regenerative medicine really looks at a lot of different things. One of them is the fact that as we get older, we lose that regenerative capacity. Our stem cells get older too. If there were a way to keep them in a culture, in an incubator somewhere, then imagine as you get older putting those stem cells back into the body and living a longer life. Now, living a longer life isn't always a good thing, and there are a lot of ethicists that I work with who think that 150-year lifespans are probably not a good idea, and I can understand that. I mean, I just turned 50, and I'm sick of myself already. I don't see how I'd like to live maybe another 100 years, but it's definitely something to think about, and that's how stem cells could perhaps extend our lives.
Does the fact that we lose so many cells every minute and that they're replaced by adult stem cells, does that have an impact on how you see embryonic stem cells and the ethics that you apply to the embryonic stem cells?
Yes, it does. If the adult stem cells, which are the older, developmentally more mature type of stem cells, if they have the potential that rivals the embryonic stem cells, then you have a much different case for use of stem cells for therapies. So adult stem cells are more restricted in what they can become. An adult stem cell in the blood, for example, can make only blood. It can't make, for example, a heart muscle, although there are some that would disagree with that. The skin stem cells, for example, make only skin. The stem cells that are present deep inside the crypts, these little places, involutions in our intestine, make only new intestinal cells. But embryonic stem cells, on the other hand, have this powerful ability to make any one of over 200 cells and tissue types in our body. So if science can figure out a way to manipulate embryonic stem cells down these pathways for intestines, for brains, for heart tissue, for new pancreases or new skin, then you have a single source that could be used over and over again to generate tissues that are failing or that are injured in a body. That's the promise of embryonic stem cell research.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Christopher Thomas Scott is the author of the new book Stem Cell Now. He directs the program on stem cells and society at Stanford University's Center for Biomedical Ethics.